You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Really is the culmination of many of the shows we've had the last couple of weeks dealing with various types of medical ethical issues. And tonight, what I want to discuss when it comes to practical halakhic application are the basic contemporary practices when it comes to transplantation of organs in the world of medicine halakha today. The two types of formats that exist in modern science and medicine today are using cadaver parts, and of recent vintage, we now, Baruch Hashem, have the capacity in certain types of transplants to use live transplants from a live donor to give part of their body parts to save a human life. This is a new phenomenon of our specific century, the 20th century, 21st century. And when it comes to analyzing this and understanding it, I want you to listen carefully, because I'm going to bring into fore many of the sugyas, many of the makaras we've learned before, put it all together and show you exactly how everything fits together and come to contemporary medical halakhic practice. Just to start off the shiur tonight, I want to mention that when the Torah itself gave us the mandate, gave us the yesod concerning the halakhic responsibility that we have to practice medicine to save human life, so I pointed out many times in the course we went through, not only is there an obligation upon a doctor or medical professionals to practice medicine to save human life, but I pointed out there's likewise a halakhic incumbency for the patients to seek out medical help if they feel their life is at stake. If there's a double incumbency on the medical community and on the patient community. Both have the same source, the rapi rapi pasek, zimachai, both of them. So no cholo can say, well, I didn't want to, I didn't think I was necessary, I wanted to, you know, basically not have to go through this. Halakha l'masa, there is an obligation on the deraisa level to undergo medical treatment, even if that means having to undergo surgery to accomplish this. And tonight you're going to see, even if it means having to perhaps receive an organ from somebody else to save your life, this all comes under rapi rapi, based upon contemporary medical types of capacities. Now, number two, the question of whether or not the medical treatment you're undergoing could potentially jeopardize your life, because every medical procedure, whether it's medicinal or surgical, can potentially have a negative side, and some people do develop an allergic reaction to various types of medicines they're taking. Well, most people don't have an allergic reaction. It is possible, and some people take medicines that for most people help them. Some people ultimately die as a result of taking that medicine. The same thing when it comes to operative procedures, where most people might be saved. There are some people, God forbid, who die as a result of an operative procedure. So the question which Chazal had asked is, how do we know we have a right to undergo this type of endangerment? Who gave a right to the doctors to put the patient in this type of endangerment? Who gave a right to the patients to put themselves under such endangerment? So once again, your Chaim HaKoyim, one of the French Balaitesis, as Claude is holding, that is subsumed under Rapi Arape, Mikan Shenitan Roshus L'Rav L'Rapos, that he has the divine Roshus to put the potential patient under tremendous sakanot in order to cure them. That's the way the mitzvah was devised, that's the way the mitzvah is given, that's the rishus given to him by the Rabbanu Shalom, and therefore you don't have to worry about it. As long as statistically the medicine that they're treating you with is what's called the refuah veduka, a medical treatment that's been approved as being scientifically, medically sound, and has proven to be beneficial in most cases, that allows you to use that medicine no matter what the side effects might be for some people. You can hope and pray that you're part of the rove and undergo that type of medical treatment. So therefore, sakana of a normally refuah veduka, which is either medicinal or surgical in nature, even transplants, is allowed based upon the fact that we have now refuahs vedukas that have, Baruch Hashem, successfully saved lives of thousands of people, millions of people. We can use those without a fear. Now, the next thing I want to mention to you, and that is one of the sugyas I taught you over the last couple of months, is the concept of a person who is dying And the fact of the matter is they only have chayisha, a couple of minutes left. And medical community says there's one possible type of medical cure, either medicinal or surgical, that might save your life. But it's so powerful, if it doesn't save your life, it might snatch away whatever minimal life you had left. If you didn't do anything, you might live for 2 months. And by doing this medical procedure, whether medicinal or surgical, you might not live more than a couple of days. So that's called sacrificing chayisha for the sake of chayi olam. There, there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which is paskin by the Shulchan Aruch, and that is you are allowed to potentially undertake the danger of sacrificing your chayisha for the hope of chayi olam, of having a cure. And then when we learned those sugis, I pointed out to you that some of the major prerequisites of that is that you have to have the following tanayim, that the medicinal care or the surgical care has to be classified as refu beduka. Number two, you have to have, approximately speaking, 75% of the medical community saying that this is the only option available for you, because otherwise you're definitely going to die. So you need what's called a roif hakaful. You need a psak of a rav, that in fact you're allowed to undergo this endangerment for the purposes of a medical cure. You also have to have a statistical proof that people who have undergone this surgical or medicinal treatment, instead of just living a couple of months, were able to survive at least a year or more based upon statistical studies. And what's interesting and fascinating is that when it comes to the potential success rate of this specific procedure, where some people can say it has to have a 50% chance of saving you, we don't pass on that. We pass on even a suffix rachak miod. This is a Moshe's lashon or Henkin's lashon. Even that is allowed when it comes to this. This is an optional thing. Many times, some of these surgeries, especially when it comes to transplants of organs, come under this specific rubric, and therefore that's the source for doing this. According to halacha strictures, chayisha chayolad is something you're allowed to do. It comes under the rapi rapi, all the makaris I gave you before. Which now brings me, Rabbi Yisai, to the next question. And that is the following. So if that's the case, when it comes, therefore, to undergoing all different types of dangerous procedures, so initially the only type of organ transplants that were available, going back from the earliest days, an organ transplant, is we had the donation, for instance, of corneas, we had the donation of skin, we had the donation of cadaver kidneys, and this is what I would say, by and large, was one of the major sources when it comes to doing transplant surgery to save people's lives. As science continued, Baruch Hashem, they were able to add to the list the concept of transferring livers, also the concept of the having a heart transplant and a lung transplant. These are later developments, first becoming a real practical reality. 1960s, 1970s is when these types of medicinal activities started to be perfected and became a refu beduka. So in all these cases, let me first deal with the cadaver and then go to real life types of donations to show you the similarities and the differences. When it comes to the uniqueness of a cadaver type of transplant, over here, the concern about the donor is basically not a concern when it comes to life and death, because you're taking an organ from a dead person. So there's no more any sakana to the donor itself. The only shailas you had when it came to using a cadaver donation is the isurim you are violating in taking an organ from a dead body. As I pointed out in the last couple of weeks, you had to counterbalance the fact that there is an isa deraisa to have any type of hana from a messes body. You have to counteract the fact that anything that's done to disfigure or to show disrespect to the body, nisa nivul mes deraisa. You have to be concerned with the fact that there is a mitzvah kavasig vareno, which you're not going to be mekayim on this organ that you're taking from the person's body. You have to be concerned with the fact there's a lav, the isa lo salim, which means there's a lav that if you don't let the body part be buried, you're violating a lav as well. You're being mezalzel in the kedusha saguf that I gave you in the cover, showing you it has a kedusha for sefer as well. All of this stuff had to be overcome. And the basic consensus psak of those gedolim who who allowed cadaver transplants, and this I would say is the overall majority of poskim, is that the mitzvah pekuach nefesh overrides all of these specific isurim, and that allows us to violate all of them. The only machlokas you have in the world of poskim is the question of whether or not the taking of a body part of a cadaver, is that a ben adam l'makam shela, or is that also a ben adam l'chavero? And when I showed you a couple of weeks ago, that this is the yesodus de machlokas between none other than the Chassam Sofer, and between the Baal Binyan Tzion, Rav Ettlinger, who's one of the great German gedolim of the same exact period of time, what the Chassam Sofer was of the opinion is that the concept of taking a body part from a cadaver is actually a ben adam l'makam shela, and if that's the case, according to the Chassam Sofer, you would not have to have any official acquiescence of the person before they die to use their body parts after they passed away. It's purely a ben adam l'makam shela, and that's the way the Chassam Sofer formulated it. The Binyan Tzion, interesting enough, he was of the opinion that if you can't steal somebody's property, their physical goods, to save life, without, but obviously, either asking the person for permission or having in mind to pay them back or reimburse them for what you did. So how in the world can you basically take their body parts without their acquiescence or having the ability to pay them back or give them back what you took from them? So therefore, he was of the opinion that before any body part can be taken as a cadaver transplant, you must have the heskim of the deceased before they passed away, like writing a little piece of paper, an organ donation card or something, giving an indication that they are mochel, those people, because you can never pay a person back for a body part. If you steal merchandise from their properties to save life, you're using gozel mamon kedei lahatzel atzmo. So we hold, like the Balei Tosfos and the Rosh, as long as you have a mind to pay them back, that obliterates the problem. But there's no way that the Benzian says, on a functional level, you could ever pay anybody back for a body part you borrowed from them. So therefore, for there, you need a real, tangible mechila of the person who's dying, that they're not expecting for you to pay them back for the body part you're borrowing from them. Therefore, he requires b'teres chumra, an acquiescence from the chola before they die, for that type of haskama to take place. And depending upon which group of poskim you're dealing with, quite obviously some poskim will poskim purely Chassam Sofer and not need the heskim of the chol before they die. Others will be more machmir, like the sheet of the Binyan Tzion, wanting them to give something in writing or some verbal statement to a bezon or something, signifying, I know what I'm doing, therefore I'm being mochel, you want to use that body part to save life, I'm giving permission to do such. This is a machlekes, and many poskim say to cover all bases. That's why you have an organization like HOD, the Halachic Organ Donation Society, where they tell everybody, if you want to be a potential donor in the future of an organ to save life, sign the paper, you cover all bases, because not only is the Chassam Sofer covered, the BNC was covered. That's how that organization came into existence. Now, another thing I want to mention to you, when it comes to the cadaver donations over here, is that for many of the donations, specifically when it came to the donation of the kidneys, donation of the eyes, of the cornea, donation of skin and such, their full-fledged halachic death, a cardiorespiratory death, was sufficient in order to accommodate that type of transplant. When it comes, however, to the heart and the lungs, for that the medical community are not going to take a person who's undergone cardiac respiratory death. They feel the organs are so worn down, so traumatized, by the time you take them out of the body, at least that's the way it was up until this point in time. If that's the case, that's not sufficient time with which to grab them out of the body to implant to somebody else. That's why in the 1960s, 1970s, you had the Presidential Commission, the Harvard Commission, developing what's called the brain death formula for declaring death. And it's that specific protocol that's used by and large around the world to harvest organs of people who are brain dead for the purposes specifically of cardiac and respiratory donation. At that point in time, the organs have not been traumatized or diminished in their functionality to a level that it's not going to be successful to somebody else. And that's the way it's practiced when it comes to relying upon those specific things. In the Jewish world, That puts a problem concerning to be a donor, because when you just do a head count of the Gedolei HaPoskim around the world when it comes to which type of death allows you to harvest a cadaver organ, you will see, if you just went through the list of names, that I would say without a question that 95% of world Gedolei HaPoskim hold you have to rely upon the cardiac respiratory interpretation, which precludes therefore being a donor from cardiac respiratory. There is a 5% group of Gedolim, especially some located in Eretz Yisrael, the Rabbanus HaRoshes, and some in America as well, Rabbi Tendel leading that group, who hold that a brain death interpretation is halachically acceptable, and therefore they will allow you to be a donor as well. The fact of the matter is, it depends upon who you possibly are. We don't have a Sanhedrin and Gadol today, so we don't have what we call an official vote to make anybody a Zaken Mamre, but there are two shitas, so I have to admit to you what the Rov HaShita is. It's already been, however, stated by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, who was not an advocate of brain death, he advocated cardiac respiratory, that he says the whole question over there is to be the donor. When it comes to the recipient, he paskan halacha lamasa, that the way organs are gathered in the world at large, where they realize up front that there's no way in the face of this earth that's going to have, based upon contemporary practice, enough organs they're harvesting to take care of the needs and necessities of the public at large. People usually put themselves on a list and usually have thousands and thousands of people vying for the same exact organ. The organs are harvested irrespective of who's on the list. They harvest because they realize no matter how many they harvest, they're never going to have enough. So you putting your name on the list is not going to cause that person to have the organ schlepped out of the body. It's going to be schlepped out whether your name's on the list or not. He felt the cause and effect of you putting your name on the list to be a question for the evil to stay mikshal, he feels is defunct based upon the way the system works. And therefore, he's the one who therefore said to be a recipient of the organ that's already available, if a halacha masa, you can be part of that group. But that's only if you have mass harvesting without any regard to who you're harvesting for. Mass amounts of people who, quite obviously speaking, are potential recipients. In some places in this world where it's almost zeh keneged zeh, his lumdus would not be applicable. Many gedolim, for that reason, don't want people in Eretz Yisrael to get harvesting organs of hearts and lungs in Eretz Yisrael. They send them to America, because in America, the volume justifies the lumdus he basically articulated. Now, getting back to this. So far, you know, this I would say is a pretty much of an interesting lumdus when it comes to organ transplant, cadaver organs. The only problem, what I want to share just for 2 minutes before I get to the live organ transplants, is an interesting concept which Rav Unterman, who was one of the early Gedolim who dealt with these topics, when it came to specifically corneal transplants. In all the other stuff I mentioned up until now, when it comes to hearts, lungs, kidneys, all of the stuff, you're dealing with pekuach nefesh without a question, and that is the matzah of what the person you're trying to help. But when it comes to a person who's receiving corneal transplant, is a person who they cannot see, are they categorized as a cholish yesh bo sakana? It's an inability to see. But besides that, the body is otherwise physically healthy. And in our day and age, with dogs that have been trained to take blind people around, and people being taught how to use modern technology with sticks and everything else, it is the possibility to function as a blind person in society and not be in continual sakanas nefashos as it was perhaps going back to many, many early years. So there then erupted a major machlokus when it comes to corneal deficiencies. Is the person a cholish yesh bo sakana? After this was debated, it seems the rove of the opinion is, if a person has both of the corneas defective, which means you can't see from both of the eyes simultaneously, that person was given the status by Runtum and others to be a chola sheyesh by sakana, and all the other term I gave when it came to cadaver transplants applies to that person as well. The big shayla rose, what happens if I have one eye that's good and one eye that's bad? So I'm not really in the state of sakana because I can see with one eye. So I might not have the greatest peripheral vision, but I'm not in the state of a person who can't see at all. So that person, they did not want to categorize as a cholish yesh by sakana. So chazav kashu l'duchta, if a person only has one cornea, it has to be replaced, and you're going to be taking the cornea from a dead corpse in order to fix it, how do you override all these surim I mentioned before? There's no pekuach nefesh. So here, Unterman came up with an ingenious lumdus, with some Gedolim accepted, some did not accept. But let me tell you what he says to understand his lumdus. What he says very simply is, and I mentioned this in the past in some of the Makaris we went through, that halacha lamasa, that technically speaking, we have in the world of halacha, in the case of grafting. Grafting is the classic case, it's a sugi masechta sota, and that is the question, what's the halacha if you take a little sapling tree that's just been planted, which is going to be all of the rice for the next 3 years, you cut off one of its branches, and you basically graft it to what's called a zakein or mother tree that's already 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, and it produces fruit. This little branch produces fruit. Now, is the fruit basically coming from its initial origin, or do we look upon the fact that without being connected to this mother tree, the zakeina, it would not produce fruit, and therefore attribute the fruit production to the tree it's connected to, and therefore lose its identity as an olah branch? So the psak given by the Gemara, the way we paskin is, since this specific branch could not produce fruit without being connected to the mother tree, the halach is, once it's connected, and that causes to once again renew its functionality, it's identified with, in fact, the thing it's connected to, and that thing animates it, gives it its new identity, so the fruits that are grown in Kanalahaba are looked upon as coming from a zakeina tree, not from an olah tree. That lumdus and that sugya is readapted by Runtum and others when it comes to transplanting an organ. An organ, for instance, a cornea itself, halacha lamasa might be, if you claim it is a part of the body that has all the halachas of the Yisrael mentioned before applying to it, so what do you do with one cornea being transplanted into a person's body if pekuach nefesh is not there? So Untamin was mechadish, that when I take this cornea, which is an inert object, and we put it into a person who can't see, and once again it's animated, bringing the eye to be once again a functional device to permit the person to see again, he claims it becomes buckled to the body that is connected to. It reanimates the functionality of this organ, taking away the halacha of being a dead organ. And therefore all these surah I mentioned before basically disappear into halakhic value. He says that in fact, in actuality, he says any organ from any dead body that has become a dysfunctional entity, once it's connected to a live body and it becomes animated again, you have the same exact lumbus, becomes an animate organ, and all these are applying to a dead body organ, no longer apply to it. That's why he says a kohen can receive an organ transplant, because once the organ is connected to his body, then it becomes a techiyas ha'meisim, therefore it's basically permissible. They use this interesting mashal. Tosis talked about Eliyahu HaNavi, we had a couple of days ago in the, I think, Baba Basra, how Eliyahu was able to go to a child that seemed to be dead and resurrect him. The concept of Tumas, as we had those sugi of Tumas Semes. So Tosis says Eliyahu realized that he had the capacity to revive him, and once he revived the child, the halachas of dead, the kedayim and tumah, are going to be retroactively totally eradicated. So you see, when you are guaranteed a result, and you know based upon, you know, your capacities, so even though momentarily you seem to be involved with tumah, involved in dead, if able to resurrect it, all these sin fall by the wayside retroactively. So that's what Rav Unterman said, even when it came to corneas, which, I'll be honest with you, you're an eye doctor, right?
I think you use Rav Aaron's, what do you call it, Hector?
Which Hector is that?
That he said that, again, corneas are in shortage, as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So once it's removed, who cares where?
That's right.
It doesn't make a difference where it goes.
Al, what are you saying? I can't hear you back here.
I'm saying, you can't. Why can't you use Rav Aaron's Hector the same way, even for cornea,
right? What is that?
Because there's more need than cornea is available. So it doesn't make a difference when you're taking it out. You don't know who's getting it, so you could be able to use that same logic.
So what you want to say is that based upon the supply and demand thing, we can perhaps use his specific lumdus as well. I hear what you're saying.
Unless you're taking out for a specific person.
But it's generally not done that way.
I'm saying, but in other words, if it's done piecemeal, then you have to show
it. It's usually an issue of supply and demand, as you said. And the bigger problem I have, though, is what do you do with the rest of the eye?
Yeah.
So if the rest cornea, then what do you do?
You have to go to the goat tour. You can't throw it away. There's no question.
The mice, it's not. I don't think that's what happens.
But I'm saying, though, how often you surely should have.
I hear you.
But the fact of the matter is, but that's the metzias. I hear what you're saying. Could very well using that lumbus. Now, you asked the following question. So the question is, so far, I have been playing with the concept of the donor cadaver body being that of a Jew. That's where all these shaylos are applicable. There's no question that if you're able to get the body parts from a non-Jew, most of these shaylos fall by the wayside, because on a goyish body, there's no isa hanah, there's no isa of nivul hames, there's no mitzvah kavura, there's no isa lo solin. So all these serum, you're trying to count the balance, doesn't? That's why when Rav Moshe and Rav Avadi Yosef were asked, whose body part should we go for? They say go for a non-Jew rather than a Jew, because it eliminates a lot of these specific shaylos. So shkoyah for bringing it up.
The reality is, even in New York, which is a significant Jewish population, most of the donors are non-Jews.
So if that's the case, that makes a lot of the questions we have as a moot point itself. But realize, I'm just calling that if you have a Jewish donor, what you have to do when it comes to dealing with this. Now, so we've gone through basically most of the types of transfers we have on that level. We now come to the next level. And that is the first organ that the scientific community were able to really take from a person when it comes to a live organ transplant with kidneys. And based upon stats, even though you could use theoretically a cadaver kidney for the purposes of helping a patient that has two dysfunctional, you have to have a person who has two dysfunctional kidneys, and the only thing they're surviving on is based on hemodialysis. Otherwise, the whole shayla is not a shayla. So you know this person has to either be on dialysis or they're going to die. So this person is surely in the state of chavush yesh b'sakana. So the first transplants were done with cadaver kidneys. And they were pretty successful. But they found later on, if you really want to be successful, the ones to get the organ from is, the science became more fine-tuned, was in actuality a live donor. So when that became a medical option, became a refu beduka, now the big shaylas that were being functionally mentioned were shaylas not only vis-a-vis the concept of the recipient, because when it comes to the recipient also, Rabbi Yitzhai, the recipient has to be in a position that this is the only option they have, otherwise they're going to die, and therefore it has to be a definite pikuach nefesh for them, and there has to be some already proof that they're going to benefit. Now let me just mention one important factor. When it came to a person going off dialysis to be a recipient of a kidney, now when you put a person through a kidney operation, Rabbi Yitzhai, whether you're taking out or you're putting in, Chazal looked upon that as a situation of surgery, and it's a sakana. I mean, you can kill the person in a surgery. So if that's the case, the person has to have a medical reason to allow you to do a surgery on the body to put a kidney in from somebody else. Over here, after many of the, I would say, modern rabbinical poskim who dealt with the medical community analyzed it, so they said the basic halachic requirement for the recipient is that the person cannot survive on hemodialysis for a long, long period of time. The person is ultimately going to have a problem that it's not going to work. And I've come across hemodialysis patients that their blood vessels get clotted to such a level they don't even have any place to make portals from anymore. So it has to be a person who you see is heading in the direction of literally a dead end, pshuto kamashmo. Number two is the organ that they're going to get will therefore, hopefully, based upon stats, guarantee them a longer life rather than staying on hemodialysis. So if that's something that you have access that it's going to apply to the patient who's the recipient, they will allow them to receive this and could obviously have that transplant take place. But now we come to the donor. When it came to the donor, this became the hot issue in halachic literature. And what I'm going to do now, Rabbi Yisrael, and the time I have left, is deal with this topic to the end of today's year. Now listen carefully. On this topic, I would say there are about 5, 6, 7 gedolim who dealt with this topic. You have the Minichas Yitzchak, Rav Weiss, as one of the gedolim apostolim who dealt with it. You have the Tzitzel Yezer, Rav Waldenberg. You have Avadi Yosef who dealt with it. And when you go through these Ma'adin Gedolim, listening to what their tshuvas have to say, they point out there's certain klolim I have to mention up front to show what the shayla is. And let me explain to you what the problem is. There is a Gemara in Talmud Yerushalmi, in Masechtas Trumos, that has a very interesting story with an interesting bottom line. The Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yonasan and Reish Lakish had one of their fellow Amoraim captured by a bunch of gangsters. And these gangsters had a reputation that anybody who came in under their dominion didn't survive very long, especially if they were a Jewish person. So when they heard that their friend was captured by these local gangsters, Rav Yonasan said, we better prepare the Orin and the Tachrichin, because that's going to be the inevitable result. Reish Lakish says, what are you talking about? I used to be a gangster boss. I know how to speak to these people. I can explain it to them. I'm telling you, I'm going to be able to be Matzah, our friend, and leave it to me. So he didn't listen to Rav Yonasan. Reish Lakish went on in his specific journey to see if he could be Matzah, his friend. Lo and behold, Yerushalmi tells us, when Rav first came amongst them, he said what he had to say and do what he had to do, and he was ultimately convinced them to basically let their fellow Amora be released. And the story goes is that therefore he was matzel him, and it seems that they said to Reish Lakish, you know, you inspired us, is there anybody that perhaps can give us a blessing we should succeed in our endeavors in the future? So he says, don't worry, I have a good friend of mine, he'll give you a good bracha, you want to come back with us? So they escorted Reish Lakish and the saved Amira back with them, with these gangsters, and they went to Rav Yonasan for a gita bracha. So Rav Yonasan gave him a bracha, and the bracha he gave to them is God should give you everything that's coming to you, as he would do to others, you know. So they interpreted it as a gita bracha. The fact is, Rabbi, so you knew what he really meant by saying that. Mida keneged mida. And the story is, they were so appreciative of the bracha, they said, thank you. And en route back, Yerushalmi says they were met by a group of other bears or lions, and the rest is history. So the bracha he gave was Mekuyim B'Shleimus. Now, on that Yerushalmi, we therefore see there was a machloek between Rabbi Yonasan and Reish Lakish, where the person could put themselves in at least a 50% B'Kuach Nefesh Sakana to save somebody from 100% Sakana. Reish Lakish seemed to paskin you could, Rabbi Yonasan seemed to paskin you can't. And the question at the end of the day is, when Yerushalmi quotes the story, is Yerushalmi saying we should paskin like Reish Lakish, or is Yerushalmi saying we should paskin like Rabbi Yonasan? And what's interesting, in the postgame, you have a split in some of early Rishonim. Some early Rishonim hold that what we derive from this Yerushalmi, based upon the success of Reish Lakish, that a person would seem to be obligated to put yourself in 50% sakana to save somebody for 100% sakana. Others claim now, Reish Lakish did what Reish Lakish, he was a gangster, mob gangster in the past. Most people don't have the credentials he had, so he had unique characteristics. But most people should not take that chance. What Rav Yonasan did to say that he's not going to even attempt is basically normative halacha. If a person can't put themselves in 50% sakana to save somebody from vaday sakana. And what's interesting to note, that the Rambam, the Rosh, and the Rif do not quote that Yerushalmi halacha l'masa. It's for that reason that the Sma says in his Perush Tachashim Mishpat, in Siman Tov Chavav, that we don't paskin that Yerushalmi, and that it's prohibited to put yourself a 50% sekunda to save somebody from vade sekunda. That's what he paskins. Now, the only problem is I taught you a couple of weeks ago a Talmud Babli text in Masechta Sanhedrin that gives the following case scenarios. A person drowning in the river, and you're able to jump in and potentially save them. A person is about to be mauled by animals, and the Gemara says you can jump in and get them out of the sakana. A person is about to be basically pounced upon by a bunch of robbers, and you're able to intervene and save that person. So the Gemara says on that daf in the Masechta Sanhedrin, Ayin Gimel, that you mechuyif to intervene based upon two psukim, one in Asay, Hashibosala, Hashavas, Vedas, Haguf, and Elois Asay, Lo Samad Adam Riacha. So the question everybody asks is, in any of those interventions that the Gemara is describing, the matzil is putting themselves in danger. So the question is, how can you say we basically don't pass in like the Yerushalmi because you're saying that Rabbi Yonasan did not want to do what he wanted to do? How do you dovetail that unwillingness to do in the Yerushalmi, where it seems to be the unanimous opinion when it comes to the Bible text and the Masechta Sanhedrin that you are mechuyev based upon Asei to intervene and be matzel that person? How do you prevent there shouldn't be a stira between what the Bible seems to say and the Yerushalmi says? So the answer they give, and this is the crucial part of tonight's shir, is there's a Tshuvas HaRadvat from David Ben Zimra, and what he says is the whole answer to these questions is based upon halachic medical statistics. And this is what he says. He says that if you're dealing with a situation where the ability for the person who's the matzim to have a very good chance, 60, 70% chance of failing and dying themselves, so when the statistics are geared against the matzel, there for you to try to attempt to do such, you're called a chassid shaita. And on the contrary, upon that we apply Rabbi Akiva's principle, chayecha kodmei. The famous Rabbi Akiva, hatarecha melcha, but when your life is basically being buttressed against another person's life, you're no longer chayev to be a matzel, chayecha kodmei, they're called a chassid shaita, and that's the term used by the Radvaz. When you deal with the question of a 50% chance of survival or loss, in that case, basically what the Rava says, there might be a reshus for you to try to attempt to matzel the person from 100% sakana, but it's only a reshus, it's not a chiyuv. And he claims the Yerushalmi text I quote between Rish Lakish and between the case of Rabbi Yonasan was at least a 50% sakana, and therefore that's why Rav Yonasan felt, if it's only a reshus, I don't want to take that chance. Where Rish Lakish felt he could beat the stats, and he succeeded. But as we say, we paskin, not like Rish Lakish, it's a reshus. If you don't want to take the reshus, you're not mechuyev to do such. And that's why the Rishalmi basically said, there's no chiyev to do such in that case. When it came to the bodily text of saving a person from drowning, from rolling, from hugging, there, the Radva says, that's where the potential endangerment to the matzel, 30, 40%, so it's minimal, it's not a definite 50%. When your potential endangerment is 30, 40% or less, you're chayiv, according to Dinei Torah, if you have the capacities to intervene to save them and not basically stand on the by the kaim hashavas aveda saguf. So according to the Radvaz, the determination whether you're chassid shaita and it's asa to put yourself on that sakana, or as a reshus and you have the permissibility if you want to do such, but there's no aveir if I don't, and the chiv to be matzah with an asilos depends upon the potential endangerment to the matzil, what their subject is based upon stats, and that will determine your halakhic practice. Therefore the Bavi and Rishon, we talk about two different hechatimses. So now the big question is, once you say that, we now come to the question, which category is the person who is giving their organ to somebody else to save their life? What category of sakana are you putting yourself in? That's the way the Pesukim pose it. And they point out that besides that question, you have a secondary question. There's another tshuvas HaRavaz, doesn't deal with stats, but deals with the following question. There was a Goyish king who said to the Jewish community that unless you allow me to cut off the ear of one of your members, if you don't let me do that, the Jew I have in my prison, I'm going to assassinate him tomorrow. So the question was posed to the Radvaz, does the Jewish community have to basically have somebody have the willingness to cut off their ear to save somebody else's life? That was the question posed to the Radvaz. And what the Radvaz said is something quite interesting. This is brought down by the Poskim. They point out that you are mechuyev when it comes to Hashavas Aveda and when it comes to Lo Samoid to be matzel somebody with the physical broad might of your body, to be matzel somebody with the chacham you have when it comes to medical care, or basically with your mumminess, whatever it might be. You are not mechuyev according to halacha to cut off body parts to save other people's life. And he said the reason is because the Torah says Dacher Dachi Noam. The Torah never mechayiv you that to cut off a body part to save somebody's life. It's not so. Therefore, the most that
he
could
uses
be,
that pasuk.
Yes,
he uses that pasuk.
He uses that pasuk.
That's not like
he uses the pasuk. Period. So therefore, halach lamasa. Therefore, he says that the most it could be would be a reshus, but it's surely not a chov, and that's what he passes now. There are gedolei poskim who take both psukim of the Radbaz and put them together in the following package deal, and determining upon what your conclusion is, you come to your respective opinions. When it came, and this here I just want to quote to you what, for instance, the Minchas Yitzchak paskin, the Minchas Yitzchak said in Shelos and Shuvas Chelek Vav Simin Kufnun, he says, as far as he's concerned, the question of you being a donor for the purposes of giving the kidney to somebody else, he says, "Hoyol the kayamis efsharish al sakana kamaisa hanikuach." That, as far as I'm concerned, the harvesting of the organ from the person who is healthy to save somebody's life has tremendous sakanas involved with that type of surgery. So, therefore, the surgery might kill the donor. You don't know if the person, God forbid, might not wake up from the anesthesia, he might undergo hemorrhaging, there's a whole bunch of things that happen. So his life is in a state of pikuach nefesh. Number two, he says, Yochel Lios, Shebaza Yovo Hatorim Liudei Sakana, Shebaza Avachat, that he might need his second kidney in the future that he's not going to have now because he gave it away. So he gave away his spare tire. So based upon the sakana he feels that's involved in the surgical procedures, and based upon the need of perhaps of this in the future for his own personal purposes, he wants to say that as far as he's concerned, the sakana over here is from 50% and more, which based upon the Radvaz, would therefore either make it a reshus or make it halakhically prohibited, and therefore might come under the ghetto of a chassid shaita. So therefore he ended up being tremendously negative when it came to this specific concept. What is interesting to note is that not only he basically passed in Bechumra, but even Rav Waldenberg, that Tzitzis Eliezer normally is a pretty modern Pesach when it comes to Piskei Halachos, he could obviously also seem to follow in the Simon Malhalach of the Minchas Yitzchak. And he says that Samach Divrei Rofim Shomosh Shemasa Itzvas Kilya, etc. Are in Karech with Sakanas the Fashas. He says Ein Lasseis Kane. He says the only time he might give her permission if you have like 90% of the doctors say for this healthy guy wants to give based upon family history and his own medical history, he doesn't have too much danger. Otherwise, for normal people, he passes the Chumra. Believe it or not, the one who's tremendously makel over here is Avadi Yosef. When it comes to Avadi Yosef, he also, but obviously, brought down all these tshuvas that I mentioned to, and all the makaris I basically mentioned. And he says, if that's the case, he's of the opinion, based upon the amount of research he did, he felt that many doctors had assured him that the sakana level is less than 50% when it comes to the donor. Once you put it in less than the 50% level, it becomes then under the level of Hashavas Aveda and the concept of what Rabbi Yisrael Samad. But since he points out there's the other Radvaz, that the Torah would never mechayiv you to cut off a body part, the most I can say and permit, it's a reshus, but it's not a chov to do such. But he didn't aser it like his other colleagues did. So that's why Rabbi Yisrael, in the world today, based upon the fact we don't have a Sanhedrin, a Gadol, possibly this way and that way, you have some people that allow themselves to be donors when it comes to kidney donations. There are some people who want to ask themselves based upon those who are machmir. You have different, therefore I want to point out to you that the field has two groups of poskim over here. And the fact of the matter is, but the most a person would have is a reshus to do such. Nobody should be told there's a chiyuv to do such, especially based upon the Tshuvas HaRadvaz, because the Dar Dachanon is on the Shalom. That basically precludes that from being a halachic obligation. So we therefore see Rabbi Yosef from this, technically speaking, then the world of poskim, when it comes to live kidney transplants, yesh matirim b'teres reshus, yesh oisrim b'teres reshus, they say that in that specific case. Now, in live transplants, there's another type of transplant, and that is the transplant of liver. Now, what makes the liver transplant different than the kidneys?
You don't have to say.
Our liver is basically, you cut off a little piece, and two things happen. It regenerates itself in the donor's body, so he's not missing a liver for the future. It also generates a full-fledged liver in the recipient's body. So the chasarinus you have, that were the concern of Weiss when it came to kidney donation, are not applicable when it comes to live liver donations. So if that's the case, many who perhaps were more machbir when it came to kidneys were a little more mako when it came basically speaking to livers because of how it works. But that doesn't mean, Rabbi Isai, that even with a liver donation, there isn't a danger to the donor, there isn't a danger, quite obviously, to the recipient. I have one mechutin of mine who is a doctor who used to be part of the live liver donation group that functioned in Mount Sinai Hospital in Manhattan over here. And he told me that for many, many years, they were riding high, Baruch Hashem, they had tremendous success. And that's why all the insurance companies, when the people wanted to have this type of operation, if you go to Mount Sinai, we'll pay for it, we'll cover it, based upon the stats, until one major tragedy took place. It seems that in a certain circumstance, what happened was because of, I would say, dysfunctional nursing care, in post-operative care, the operation went well, and the donor and the recipient, Baruch Hashem, seemed to be quite obviously well. But because of defective or inappropriate nursing care, not following up certain leads they had when they came to seeing certain simanim that the patient was demonstrating of having adverse effects in getting this transplant to another recipient, that person ultimately died. And unfortunately, when the insurance company and the government came in to investigate, they basically tied that the hospital was negligent. They didn't do what they had to do, took away their funding when it came to having this supported by insurance agencies and basically given the approval of the government, and that whole program stopped in Mount Sinai. It became a major cause célèbre. So what I'm pointing out to you is, as successful as you might be, and as less problematic that might be in contrast to kidneys, there's always, Rabbi Isai, a sakana, because at the end of the day, you might win the battle when it comes to the operation, but the post-operative care, the war, is as critical as the operation. Yes, sir?
Suppose there's a situation where there's a 40% chance of the Matzil getting killed when he rescues the other person. 40% is not negligible.
I'm not saying it's negligible.
And to say that he's mechuyev to do it.
So the fact at that point in time is, you know, who's going to basically say I have an exact guesstimation of 40%? Maybe it's 45%. You know, maybe it's really 50%. So I would say when basically the Radva said what the Radva said, he really, when it came to numbers, the only number he mentioned explicitly was 50% when it came to the middle category. When it came to the kitzvahs, when it came to the extremities, to the severe, on both or the limited, on both directions, he did not limit himself to specific numbers. And therefore, when he says it's less than 50%, he might, if he'd been around, we asked him, he might have said maybe only 20%, maybe 30%. He might not have gone to 40. Some posts can interpret him to mean not 50, but maybe down to 40, but he never mentioned the word 40. I'm just quoting how some posts can interpret him. It could be that you're 100% correct, that you don't want to take a chance between 40 and 50%. And between 10, 20, 30, you might be willing to undergo that type of suffering. In the other direction, once you're more than 50%, it doesn't have to be 70, it could be 55, 60, because once you go into that type of format, you have no way of cluing yourself what's going to happen when it comes to you. So the Iker is, it's more than 50, and there, I would say, anything more than 50, you're coming into Chassid Shota level. When it comes to the other level, when it comes to less than 50, you would really have to go down to a really low number to really say, I have nothing to worry about because, you know, the stats on this are pretty, pretty good. You also have to know yourself. I mean, not everybody can jump into a river and save someone, because the fact of the matter is how many people try to save people in flowing rivers, they might be excellent swimmers. But the way the current's going and everything else, You can be the most Olympic swimmer, you jump into the wrong type of water, and the way the water is flowing, it could take you down as well. So there's a lot of things you have to consider, not only your kaychas to swim. When it comes, how many people try to be matzo people and they drown together with them? When it comes to saving people from being mugged or from animals, that's also a very subjective category. I mean, how many people or how many animals is this person being threatened from? What's the likelihood with my kochos, I won't also be killed? So in that case, when you have sekes like that, that's the chiddush of Rabbi Kiva, that even though we paskin, the ahavta l'reicha kamocha, when you have situations where you think that you're not going to survive, chayecha kodmin, you always opt in the hatzala for yourself first, and the other guy comes after you. So therefore, in that case, it's very subjective, but you're allowed to make those subjective phenomena. The only thing is when the Aruch HaShulchan in Siman Tav Chavav in Chai Shemisha quotes these halachas, what he says very simply is, in the Hatzalah part, don't be unduly machmer on yourself. Which meant to say, in other words, don't say that if you fact can do it, I can't, then make chumers upon yourself. There, try to analyze as honestly as you can, and therefore assess the possibilities, because if you're matzal and nefesh, the schar you get is simply incredible. But the fact of the matter, he never says don't be machmer upon yourself after 50% to be, you know, to do it as well, because once you come to chassid shoita territory, Rabbi Isai, you know, the person who does it and dies is a shoita, and there's no way basically fixing the situation. So you have to be very careful over here. But the crucial thing I wanted to point out to you is when it comes to live transplants, it is a reshus, it's not a chov. The reason I'm saying this is because there are many people on the street that are told, you got to do it, you're mechuyev to do it. Blood transfer, when it comes to giving blood, there's no sakana, the normal conditions to the person who's giving the blood, so therefore you should be a donor to the blood system. When it comes, the only question that you have in existing halacha is to be a bone marrow donor. Now there's no sakana involved in it, but there's a heck of a lot of pain. And therefore the whole question is, whether or not because of that intensive pain, does that become a reshus, because you are giving bone marrow from your body, as a, you know, body part, and we treat it therefore as a reshus, or do we treat it as blood, since it replenishes itself, and therefore there's not too much sakana, just pain, and therefore the teres chov, that's a machlokas on poskim. But I would say the consensus, even when it comes to bone marrow, it's a reshus, not a chov, and that's the way paskin halach l'masa.
You have been listening to a presentation of benstorah.com.